Do you ever find yourself neglecting your heating and cooling systems? What about your water treatment system? My friends over at Aquarius Home Services in Kinetico offer convenient and cost-saving customer care plans that will leave you worry-free and give you peace of mind in your home. They make maintaining your equipment easy, offering great plans for your water treatment and heating and cooling systems. You don't have to worry about lugging bags of salt or when to get your furnace or AC tune-up. Aquarius just takes care of it all for you. I learned this the other day. They call you to schedule when you are due to have your service completed. It couldn't be easier. I learned that last week when they called me and told me it was time to have my water softener maintained. I didn't have to lug the bag of salts. Jake came out to my home earlier this week and did it all. So visit AquariusHomeServices.com for more details. And also, here is a message from my personal State Farm agent, Tony Hoagland.
This episode of the Flush Podcast is brought to you by Onyx Hunt, the number one GPS hunting map app. Onyx, know where you stand. Today we're talking about the largest conservation initiative in Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's history. Last week, they launched the Call of the Uplands, a $500 million campaign that will help restore America's disappearing grasslands and provide habitat to the wild creatures we all love the most. My guests today have had an integral part in launching this new campaign and will help us understand everything we need to know to answer this call. Welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host. Brandon Morton is our producer. I have a couple of very important guests with me today, but before I introduce them, I want to introduce the reason that they're sitting with me today. Last week, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever made a massive announcement. I'm going to read this directly from their website. So here it goes. In the uplands, we have a treasure unlike any other in the world. From vast golden prairies that stretch across the continent to quiet pine forests that make the world disappear, every wild place holds a promise, a chance to escape, to reconnect, to come alive. These lands are part of who we are, a gift from past generations of dedicated hunters and conservationists, inscribed with memories and a promising new adventure. Here, every acre tells a story. Your dog holding its first perfect point, the explosive flush of a wild bird, the stillness of the walk back home. These essential connections among land, water, plants, animals, and people are the foundations of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. But today, the uplands are some of the most threatened places in the world. All across North America, wildlife habitat is rapidly disappearing. Since 2009, the Great Plains have lost more than 53 million acres of grasslands, an area the size of Kansas. Longleaf pine woodlands have once covered 90 million acres of the American Southeast. Today, less than 3% remain. Changes in land management practices jeopardize the future of the West's public lands and the upland bird populations they support. The habitat we're losing poses threats to pheasants, quail, and other wildlife. From 1966 to 2017, we've seen an 83% decline in America's northern bobwhite quail populations. At the same time, we've seen a 27% decline in America's pheasant populations and a 23% decline in populations of bird species on Partners in Flight's watch list due to loss of native habitat. Today, we have the chance to change that story. That is why we've launched Call of the Uplands, our first ever comprehensive national campaign, a $500 million effort to cultivate the next generation of conservationists by providing over 1.5 million Americans with outdoor experiences and designed to enhance over 9 million acres of upland habitat from the West's expansive landscapes to the vast Great Plains to the quiet southern pine woods. This campaign is our best chance to bring together dedicated citizens, hunter, conservationists, farmers, ranchers, and other partners with a common cause, a promise to conserve our uplands before it's too late. Their page continues to go on with more information about this campaign, but rather than continue to read the rest of it, I think it would be better to hear from two of the men that have poured their own blood, sweat, and tears into this project. Joe Long and Andrew Vavra are with me today. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Travis.
I read that, what does that do? Do you get chills? I mean, does it still? You've heard it a lot, right?
Well, as the marketing guy in the room, hearing you read that word for word and having it sound like that good, part of me is like, all right, we did something right. But then a larger part of me is like, holy cow, is that depressing? Wake up, people. This is serious. There are a lot of acres and a lot of things at stake right now. And we do have to act before it's too late.
Right.
We joke about I've seen that page. I've helped work on it. I've read all of those. I've helped write it. But to kind of hear you reiterate that and say it all out loud, even for me, it kind of like punches me in the gut a little bit.
The numbers don't lie. And that's the scary part. And that's the part that I think, you know, we're young adults, I would say, all three of us here, and our future depends on things like this. My children, their children, absolutely, being able to continue hunting. It depends on us as hunters to take a stand. And that's essentially what you guys are doing here with this campaign. Before we jump into the details of it, though, I want to introduce both of you because you both have your own interesting stories and paths to what got us to this point today. Andrew, you and I have worked on projects for many years. How long have you been at Pheasants Forever now?
So I started as an intern with Pheasants Forever in 2008. So I'm basically a lifer at this point. I'm coming up on 13 years. Now I'm the director of marketing. So I've been lucky enough to stick with PF and QF long enough to work my way up. And currently I oversee our graphic design, video production, our web development, digital marketing. I've kind of lucked into what I consider a dream job for a phenomenal organization. I've been known to say I'm just lucky enough that I've been too large of a human being for them to throw me out the door. So I've just stuck around for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's something I'm deeply passionate about. You know, I love the uplands and I love going to work every day knowing that I'm working to help protect, enhance, and actually create more of these landscapes that, you know, I think are some of the most fantastic in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one point that you touched on was the fact that, you know, since 2009, we've lost more than 53 million acres.
That's not that long ago. Not like it was since our grandparents were born. I mean,
that's on my watch.
Yeah.
That's since I've been at Pheasants Forever. We have lost enough acreage to fill the borders of Kansas.
And I just got goosebumps. I hate that.
But I feel like we've been doing a good job. So like that's like
have the, we though? Because but that's, well, how can no, we say imagine. That?
That's the frustrating part, yeah, though. That's exactly why we're here right now. Because since Pheasants Forever's founding in 1982, we've completed more than 560,000 habitat projects. Right? That's a lot of habitat projects. No, we've conserved more than 20 million acres of upland habitat. That's a lot of acres, mm-hmm, right? We've permanently protected and made publicly accessible over 200,000 acres. Yet here we are, like we're moving, our wheels are moving, we're moving, mm-hmm, forward, but we're not winning the race. And that's the frightening part right now.
Hmm. So one thing that I fully enjoy about working with you and other employees at Pheasants Forever is that you're like me, when you're not, you know, typing away on the keyboard and trying to make things happen behind the scenes, you're out there in the field too. So this is your life as well. This is your lifestyle. Joe, same for you. Joe Long, how long have you been at Pheasants Forever?
I think going on like 2.5 years right now. So while my tenure with Pheasants Forever is a lot shorter than Andrew's, I've been, you know, closely following the organization as a member, but I also had the opportunity to work with them in my previous career. So to back up, I'm originally from Rockford, Illinois. Went to St. John's University. We got two Johnnies on the podcast
Johnny's
here today.
Johnnies represent.
Wow. Look at you guys.
I'm sure every single employee at Pheasants Forever that's going to listen to this is just rolling their eyes right now.
Did you start an upland organization on campus while you were there, boys?
I was part of DU. I think we were one of the first DU college chapters.
Really?
I was there.
Yeah.
I wish I had access to my St. John's email still, because I traded emails with whoever the regional representative was at Pheasants Forever talking about starting a PF chapter, and it never happened.
Oh.
And I want to know who that individual was and just, you know, give them a little crap for you know, it's a two-way street. You know,
right,
I could have
right.
gone there too. But anyways, so made my way to St. John's University, was fortunate enough to land a dream internship with the Minnesota Twins out of college. Somehow I convinced them to hire me on full-time after the internship. And I was there for about 3 years. And the coolest thing I worked on was, so Brian Dozier was a very popular second baseman for the Twins, mm-hmm. actually just announced his retirement.
Just hung him up.
Yeah, damn. Yeah. And, you know, it was like the year that he was just going off, you mm-hmm. know, most popular player on the Twins. And let's just say attendance needed some work. You know, the Twins were in dead last in the Central, and we were looking for creative ways to fill the seats. And I was like, well, Dozier's a hunter. We got a conservation organization here in town. Let's partner together and sell some tickets. And sure enough, Bob St. Pierre was just all about
it. So you
it,
approached
right?
Bob on it, or the other way around?
I approached Bob.
Okay.
Well, back up. We Bob had a because Bob used to work in minor league baseball.
Yeah. Well,
so he had some common
Tigers.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had some common connections with the Twins. So one of my bosses approached Bob, and sure enough, I was then handed the keys to kind of run with it with Bob. And we sold like over 500 Brian Dozier camo t-shirts, you
nice.
Know, and I still remember Bob's comment was like, well, camo's not really our thing, but we'll do it anyways. You know, we put
yeah.
a PF logo on the side of the shirt, and we gave some money back to the organization, and, you know, obviously sold some seats as well, which was very beneficial during that time frame with the Twins. And anyways, you know, just like anything, you grow a relationship and stay in touch over the years. And I eventually found my way into what I consider a dream full-time position, you know, working with Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. So my role, or my title, is development officer. And really, it's just maybe a fancy title for fundraiser. You know, at the end of the day, my goal is to bring new revenue for the organization, and whether that's through memberships, donations, partnerships. But the really cool thing is that none of that revenue stuff happens without building relationships, right? So at the end of the day, my goal is to go out there and build relationships with our members and donors, and be there for the time that they're ready to, you know, step up to become a life member, or, you know, put us in their estate plan, or, you know, decide to, you know, donate us their 160 acres, right? So in so many ways, it's a dream position. And yeah, I couldn't be any happier to be a part of this organization during this time period.
Well, they
well.
Have two very good employees in both of you. In my experience working with each of you, it's been nice. I remember it was over 2 years ago for sure. The first time I met you, we had lunch.
Yeah.
and you had a packet in your hand that said Call of the Uplands.
Yep.
So you have been working on this now. You gave us a kind of a view into what you were working on and why. And now the launch is here. Last week, you guys officially made the announcement for Call of the Uplands. And I kind of explained a little bit at the beginning of the show why. That's what we're going to discuss today and break this down and help people understand the reasons for it. I think they're obvious. If we hunt, if we enjoy the outdoor spaces, we don't have to be told that there's not as many of them as there once was, and why it's important. So take me back. When you started working on this project, what did that look like for you, and how has it evolved?
Yeah, great question. And Andrew is going to need to fill in some of the gaps before my arrival into the organization, because this truly, like, I mean, it didn't happen overnight. It's been going on even the 2.5 years, you know, before me coming. But, you know, really what the goal here is to raise the level of our mission to a higher level. You know, we were talking about all this loss of habitat, and it, you know, when you were reading that, that it really does strike home when you hear it. And, you know, the fact is that we can do something about this, and there's no other organization out there that has the resources that we do in order to make a significant change. And, So going back, you know, when I came into the organization and I was hired, the packet that you know I presented to you at that time was a part of my onboarding package. And when I say there's not a better time for me to come into the organization, there hasn't been, because I've been using this message with our members and donors behind the scenes for the last 2.5 years to get, you know, a little bit of inspiration going behind the scenes and some leadership gifts going. And it's working. You know, people are inspired. People recognize that we have to do something bigger and bolder and larger than we ever have before. And you know, Andrew speaks that, you know, since 2009, you know, he's been with the organization. 2009 was the year that I graduated high school. So the fact that this has been happening in the short amount of adulthood that I've had thus far is really eye-opening. And it's not too late that, you know, we can do something about it now. But, you know, truthfully, I have to give Andrew the mic here to talk about, you know, what it is that went behind the scenes before I was given this beautifully designed package that had what you were, you know, listing off at the beginning of the show, because a lot of work went into that.
So it's well polished right now. The message is clear. You guys are putting it out there in every possible place that you can right now. I'm glad that we can talk about it here as well. But what does it look like to create something like this, Andrew? This is humongous. I mean, it's not like $500 million. Let's just go grab it, you know, and you know, wash cars outside and collect, you know, a couple bucks and we're there.
Yep. So a little bit more on my background. Until recently, I was also in charge of all of our national level membership and donation campaigns. So the mailings you would get and the emails you'd receive telling you to join, renew, you know, upgrade your membership or you know, consider giving us a gift at the end of the year. I was also in charge of that. So I had a pretty heavy fundraising background on that level. So the first time that we were sitting around and this concept was brought to light, it was almost overwhelming and daunting because I know how much work goes into that.
Yeah.
And then the thing that really saved it for me in terms of, okay, we can do this, is the amount of strategy that has gone into this from the beginning. So everything's broken up into landscape level, like accomplishments that we want to see happen. And then you start adding all that up and it's like, well, what do we need to accomplish this in the East? What do we need to accomplish this in the far West? You know, how can we make an impact in Texas, Georgia, Florida, Minnesota, the Great Plains? We're a nationwide organization. We're not just a Midwest bird club, right? But when you take all of that and combine it together, that's when you come up with this number and it's like, holy cow, $500 million.
You believe in it and it's going to happen, isn't it?
That's half a billion with a B.
Right.
But we can do it. Like that was, it's like, okay, like we can do this, because it was a complete change in mindset for me personally. I know for a lot of us to go from reactive to a loss of habitat to proactive to let's get out in front of this. Like, let's make a real change for the better instead of just kind of chasing our tail and chasing lost acres. Like, let's change our philosophy and let's make a real profound difference to really jump forward. And here we are today. So we have over 270 biologists around the country. You know, we have some of the most talented staff and some of the most hardworking volunteers and some of the most invested partners, whether they're the corporate level partners or even state and federal partners. So we have all of these experts all over the nation kind of telling us what we need to accomplish to make a profound impact on our nation, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we are today. So now we're finally at the pointy end of the spear
where it's like, let's go do this.
Yeah. How long have you been working on it? Did you, I don't remember if you said.
Years.
Yeah. Can you go back to a certain point?
I can't. It's like, so it's been before Joe joined, and Joe's been here, you said, over 2 years now.
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Whose idea was it?
I don't know if it was a single person's idea as much as it was the organization realizing we can do better, mm-hmm. and our resources, our upland landscapes, our wildlife, like the water, they deserve better. Mm-hmm. So let's do better. Mm-hmm. But you can't do more with what you have now. If you want to do more, you need to gain more. And that's where the fundraising aspect comes into play.
In so many ways, like I hate to say this, but it's obvious we needed to do this, mm-hmm. right? Like I talk to members and donors on a daily basis. And I don't think a conversation goes by without the topic of the loss of habitat coming up. You know, it's almost like you know, 90% of conversations start with how the weather's going outside. Mm-hmm. I think 90% of my conversations with members and donors involve some sort of topic of the loss of habitat.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like,
does that ever get depressing to you though? When that's your constant conversation with everybody you talk to?
Depressing? No. That's a really good question. It's not depressing. It reinvigorates the reason why we're doing this. You know, you mentioned like these statistics at the beginning of the show, and imagine what they would be like without organizations like Pheasants Forever, right. and Quail Forever.
Right.
You know, so like, if anything, it just reassures me why I'm doing this, mm-hmm. right? Why I'm working for this organization as opposed to a professional sports team, yeah. right? No offense to all my former colleagues at professional sports teams, but
yeah.
this is something I really believe in,
yeah.
you know, and it's something our members and donors believe in too.
And that loss of habitat, it's only one word, but it represents so much. I mean, when you lose habitat, you're losing ground cover that keeps our drinking water clean, right? You're losing habitat for pollinator species and honeybees and monarch butterflies. You know, yes, we have a pheasant and a quail on our logo, so of course we're very biased towards those upland species, but also, you know, the sagebrush sea of the sage grouse and all the different quail landscapes to the west. I mean, habitat represents a lot, and it also represents areas for people to escape. It represents places for us to go let our dogs loose, you know? So that one word, yes, we're lamenting the loss mm-hmm. of habitat, but that means a lot. But we are the habitat organization.
Right.
And that's why we're here to do this.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're approaching about a year since the world changed from this pandemic, right? And I remember I had Howard on shortly after to talk about the state of the organization. And, you know, this is at a time when there are other nonprofits that were, you know, scared that they might not be able to survive this. And now, this announcement, you know.
Was this the best idea or worst idea to announce
got
this
right now?
We got
a half billion dollar initiative.
Going back to the fact that we knew this was coming. It's not right? like we started planning it, you know, on, you know, March 25th, you know, when the pandemic really was in our faces. You know, we knew this was coming. Our goal was to announce this at Pheasant Fest 2021 in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Mm-hmm.
Which would have been like, I don't know, maybe
last
a couple weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
So we knew this was coming, but not at any point did we say we're not going to do it. We're like, we need to do, maybe it's more, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's you know, certainly the pandemic has certainly had an effect on our organization, but we've come through this pretty strong, and this campaign's going to make us even stronger.
Yeah, and it all depends on how you want to look at it too, because our loss of local fundraising banquets and the ability for our chapters to raise money at a local level, and for those of you out there who don't know how we function uniquely as a nonprofit wildlife conservation group, we empower our local chapters to hold on to their fundraising dollars and make an impact in their own local communities, which is completely different than a lot of the other.
Like a DU, for instance?
Yep. It's where all that money is going back to the national headquarters, and then they decide strategically what they want to do with it. we think that the people in their local, you know, communities know what's best for the local communities. So we've lost all those fundraising banquets. So like that's a crush on us from not only local fundraising, but also membership numbers.
Can I ask what has happened in the last 12 months to memberships?
So our overall membership is down, but it's not down as much as we were actually nervous about.
Really?
And a lot of it has to do with our local chapters paying for the memberships of their local attendees. So they took the roster of people that showed up last year, even though they couldn't have a banquet, and said, you know what, we'll write a check for all of them. We know the importance of membership in this organization, and we want them to continue receiving the magazine and being a part of, you know, this larger organization, even though they're tied to our local chapter. And that's been inspiring. So yeah. When you see chapters step up to the plate, just unprovoked, they brought that idea up. We didn't ask them to do that. Like, that's like, okay, people are rallying around us.
Oh, for sure. So, and I've even seen, I mean, the volunteers, the passion behind this, you know, hunting, and the volunteers and the members that give their time for Pheasants Forever, and they do it for, you know, DU and other organizations, but it's still going on. They're being creative. I'm seeing on social media people that I'm friends with that are like, hey, we're holding our virtual PF banquet. I mean, I have probably in my wallet right now like 6 or 8 gun raffle tickets from people that when they see me and I got a PF hat, hey, you got to buy this ticket, or hey, I need you to. So I'm in on quite a few of these virtual banquets right now.
Yeah, I mean it's no secret that volunteers are the lifeblood of our organization, mm-hmm. right? And the reason that we've been able to get through this pandemic the way we have is very much attributed to their passion and what they do for us. And mm-hmm. it's no lie either that they're going to be a huge part of this campaign. Right. You know.
Yeah. So let's do this. $500 million is daunting as heck to think about. But you, Andrew, said, you know, you break it down, it isn't quite as massive. It seems achievable. So what does that look like when you break this campaign down? How do you guys do it internally? What does it look like to, you know, us hunters that support you?
So when it comes to the campaign itself, we have three main pillars that we like to rally around. First and foremost is obviously habitat. Then we have advocacy, so anything going on at like a state or federal level. And then we have education and outreach. So those are the main pillars that envelop the entire campaign itself. And then within those pillars, we have more broken down strategies in terms of how we're going to have our greatest effect within that pillar. So in Washington, D.C., like so much good can be done with the stroke of the pen. Like if we don't have a presence at the seat in D.C., we're kidding ourselves. So that's where that has to be a huge area of emphasis. Now, habitat speaks for itself. I've kind of already waxed poetic about
right.
like what that word even means, yep. right? So it's pretty
easy. If you're listening to the show, you understand habitat yeah, and so the importance of it.
Exactly.
And yeah. then, you know, but how do we get that? That's the question.
That's what we're trying to work on. And then, you know,
what does that look like in D.C. for somebody who's not aware of what that actually entails? So, I mean, that could be probably its own entire podcast.
It should be, and you should probably have some of the people who can speak a bit more fluently on that on mm-hmm. to speak about it. But right now, for instance, the Conservation Reserve Program is at an all-time low. It represents 20 million acres of habitat. You know,
and there's an open enrollment period.
There's an open enrollment period right now.
Yeah. Why aren't landowners signing up?
But the issue is the incentives aren't there enough for landowners to want to enroll. We're being honest. It's not as good as it could be. So we need to not only promote more CRP sign up in general, but we also need to stand up for the landowners too, to help incentivize them to voluntarily take land out of production and create, you know, wildlife habitat. So those are like the type of things that we're actively working on, because some of the private land programs that come out of D.C. have the power to do more good than we're even aware of right now. So that's a huge area of emphasis on us, because think back to 2007, 2008. That's probably some of the better upland hunting years that a lot of us can remember.
And then 2020.
CRP was at, I think, 36 million in 2007, 2008.
That's right.
It is crazy, yeah. And I wish I would have brought the graph, but there is a really what, in my opinion, has become a famous graph out there that shows the correlation between CRP acres and pheasant harvest numbers. And it is like, it's like,
it's a
aha,
direct,
there you go,
100% correlation. With one line goes up, the other line follows. When
exactly.
One goes down, the other line goes down.
Exactly. So, I mean, the work that we're doing in Washington, D.C. is, you know, obviously super instrumental in the farm bill signing and getting those policies into place. But what's so unique about our organization, we're also boots on the ground on the back end. Andrew mentioned the 270 biologists that we have out there. Their main goal is to work with private landowners and get those private landowners the proper information to enroll into these programs. So it the work we're doing in Washington, you know, again, I do agree with Andrew. You should have somebody from our government affairs team on to speak about, you know, what the day-to-day outlook looks like. But, you know, the exciting thing is we take that and then we bring that to the local communities as well.
Yep. And that's just, you know, with the private landowners.
Yeah.
Like, let's not forget public land. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of decisions that are made in D.C. and even in state capitals that affect our ability to use our public resources. And where do hunters and anglers have their seat at the table to open up access or maintain access that we already have? I mean, that's where these important programs that, you know, sustain access and healthy habitat come from.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus, you guys partner with a lot of state organizations. I know, we'll just say for Minnesota, Lasard Sams. I mean, that's a tax that voters in Minnesota voted to tax themselves, a tiny percentage of every dollar on purchases that would go to protect the natural resources. You guys have the ability to then partner with the state on projects that specifically go back into the ground. So for every dollar that, let's say I give you $5, Andrew, today, that ends up turning into how many dollars at the state level when it gets matched?
Like generally 15. Like it's a 3-to-1 match a lot of times. And not only that, but we also have the employees in place to help implement it. So we also have, you know, habitat specialists. These are the people that are actually out there doing the work, let alone all of our regional representatives and the other biologists out there identifying projects that make sense. And that's another big aspect of where we need to go in the future is random acts of conservation are gone. You know, randomly throwing out there a 40-acre or 20-acre parcel, that's great. I'm never going to downplay more habitat. Mm-hmm. But we need to be smart. We need to be strategic. Like, how do we create these habitat mosaics that work within the landscapes and are connected with each other to have an even greater impact on the overall landscape? And that's something that I think we as a society need to be more aware of.
Right.
We just need to be smarter and more efficient with how we're attacking a lot of these problems.
Well, I want to break down, I want to even take it into smaller chunks so that we can wrap our head around it and break down, you know, like, where will this money go? What is our plan here? So I want to get to that. But first, I want to thank Onyx for helping us to make this show possible. The Onyx Hunt app is one of the most helpful tools available for hunters today. I use Onyx Maps basically every single time I step into the field because it always shows exactly where I stand on a piece of property and helps me confidently hunt land that I have permission to be on. I had a meeting last week with a few of the techs at Onyx, and they told me about a few of the exciting features that they're working on to help us become even more successful hunters. The Onyx Hunt app is already full of features that you can use to dissect hunting properties, look at weather, and record every detail of your hunts. It's hard to believe that there will soon be even more. And for members that choose to purchase their elite memberships, Onyx also provides extra benefits like, right now, members can sign up for an elite membership and get a free Huntin' Fool digital membership included. That's a $48 added benefit that will help you on your hunts in the future. Onyx Maps have become an essential tool in my game bag, just like my shotgun, shells, boots, and my dog. If you've never tried the app, you can download it directly onto your mobile device before your next outdoor adventure and use their free trial. My guess is that you'll quickly understand the benefits that come with understanding the land you hunt and finding access to places that you've never knew existed. Onyx Maps, the best way for hunters to know where you stand. Onyx supports us and helps make this show possible. Onyx also supports Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever and your mission as well. I use them literally, like I just said, yeah, every time I go hunting. You guys do the same, right?
It's so cluttered and so ugly because there's just so right. many pins all over the place. But I will admit that this year I finally got better with adding notes to my pins.
Yeah. Just
so
I'm changing the colors yep. of them.
So when I'm looking at things next fall, it actually makes sense to why I have a pin there. So I'm not mm-hmm. driving past, you know, that walk-in area or the WMA being like, why did I mark this? This doesn't look good. Like, right, what am I doing?
Right. I filmed a story of a once-in-a-lifetime elk hunter up in northwest Minnesota. And there's like, depending on the year and the herd size, is anywhere from like 5 to 20 tags drawn yearly. It's yeah. a once-in-a-lifetime tag.
Oh, I put in for it.
I've been putting in every year. And I've dropped a bunch of elk pins on it this fall just in case get drawn. I know some
pretty
good elk.
Well, I'll tell you one thing to not do with Onyx is don't allow your father, who's, you know, 60 plus years, to hop in there and to do his own pins on your private land, because I now go in there and I'm like, what is going on in this app?
Yeah.
So I went out and bought my dad a membership as well, so he could nice. He could do his own pin dropping.
Yeah, my dad has one now too, and it's the same exact thing. He's like, well, hold on, let me see that. Well, how do you know that? And I was like, trust me, it's Larry Johnson who owns the land. I'm not making this up. He's like, yeah. How do you know?
Just magic.
Yeah, and then there's a bunch of other hunters too that are, you know, sitting around a camp and they're trying to tell me about how, you know, this land and who owns it. And I'm like, well, sorry, it's actually Bill's now.
Yeah.
It's in the family trust because it tells you that information.
That's funny.
Well, let me see, you know. Anyway, let's get back to this mission here. So we could easily say, okay, everybody that's a member, just double your membership. Let's, you know, send us, instead of $35, send me $70 and we'll get there, right? But it's not that easy, right? It isn't. I mean, it's hard. We're in the middle of a pandemic. You know, some families are doing the best they can to pay bills. And, you know, so it's not as easy to just say, can you please just help us get to this goal? What does it look like? What are your expectations of people and how to get to where you want to go?
Yeah, so I'll start with this, but I'd love, you know, with Andrew's marketing mind to let us know, you know, the public phase aspect of it. You know, the one thing that I want to, you know, go back to is, you know, 2 years ago, we sat down and I had this with me, right? And like I said, I've been chatting with individuals along the way. And really what I would like to start with is thank you to all the leaders that have gotten us this far along in the campaign already. If you go into the Pheasants Forever Spring Journal, you'll see a list of the folks that have been the leaders of this campaign and really have helped us realize that this is going to be possible. So big comprehensive capital campaigns like this, they are not going to become a reality without people that have, you know, higher resources, people very much unlike myself that can, you know, help us out with a large donation. So to those
people... You can't
people,
talk to the Polad family at the Twins and get them to kick in a couple million?
Yeah. Do you think they listen to this? Can we... No. yeah. But no, seriously, it is those folks with the family foundations, the corporate foundations that have helped us get this far and realize that, you know, this is possible with some serious leadership and a vision. And, you know, from here on out, it's really... time and talent is just as valuable as you know, the penny, the dollar. We obviously are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We don't operate without financial support. When you speak about people, you know, doubling their contributions in the next few years to help with the campaign, that is certainly something we'll probably be going out there with as a messaging. We'll be going out there with you know, asks to make more sustainable giving. So instead of doing you know, a membership that's going to expire after 12 months, why not set it up on auto renewal? You probably want to be a member mm-hmm. always, every, you know, all the time anyways. Why not set it up on auto renewal. We don't have to send you 7 mailings, right?
Well, right. I don't understand. So, I need to set up before you guys leave. I get mine on auto renewal because I get these things in the mail. I'm like, I think I've renewed like 3 or 4 times this year. Right?
I think yeah, and trust me, you haven't though. Because we wouldn't be sending it to you. And we get that from members saying like, I swear I'm a member. Huh. No, you've been expired for 2 years. So, you know, help us with, you know, eliminating certain resources by sending you mm-hmm. mail and same thing on donations. Become a monthly donor. Send us $5 a month.
Yeah.
You know, think about the amount of things that you spend $5 on per week, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we would love support like that creates sustainable funding that we can plan on. So there's not just one thing we're going to ask our membership or donor base to do. It's going to be a wide ranging amount of things. And some of that is going to be volunteering. We need financial support, but we need folks to give us their time, energy, and effort as well. We don't have enough full-time, team members to go out there and make all this mission happen. So,
well, I've been thinking personally, you know, how am I going to, how do I help this, you know? And I've got these three tiny little kids that I'm trying to figure out, you know, getting them memberships as well, just to increase what we're giving. Because, you know, when we get the quarterly magazine, they look through it with me, you know, from PF. And, you know, I'm looking even beyond that in a way to increase my contribution as well, because I feel like I'm not going to sit here today and say, hey, everybody, can you help with them if I'm not going to do the same? I mean, for you guys personally, what does that look like for you? I know that might be a tough question to put you on the spot here, but what does that look like?
I'll let Andrew go first.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe brought up a really good point. We are a charity, okay? Like, mm-hmm. like we do need to raise money in order, you know, to put gas in our engine to accomplish this. You know, we want to go faster and further than ever before. Well, we need more gas than we've ever had before. So, like, that's the fundraising aspect of it, right? So that is critically important. But money is just, it's the means to the end. Like, people also need to keep in mind, like, what our focus is on, what our end goals are, and that's quality habitat. It's public access. It's the ability for you to let your dog loose on a big swath of beautiful prairie. Like, what's that worth to you? Mm-hmm. And for me, who's been working for a nonprofit since, you know, he got into the workforce,
yeah,
it's not going to be a leadership gift. You know, if I tried to give every last penny I had for this, even though I do believe in it that much,
yeah,
I probably wouldn't have a wife anymore. Right?
Or a house.
So I completely understand that.
Yeah.
But if I have enough time to hunt as much as I do, I probably have enough time to help my local chapter. I probably have enough of a talent to introduce someone new to the world that I love so much, because we need more advocates. We need more hunters. We need more people out in the field with us. This past fall, I encountered more pickup trucks and more Blaze Orange people mm-hmm. than I've ever encountered in Western Minnesota in years. And that's saying something, but I was happy. It forced me to take out my Onyx and search mm-hmm. for new places. I couldn't just plan on yep. showing up at my usual, you know, public spots at, you know, 8 o'clock, assuming that nobody else will be there. But that's okay, because we need more people to feel. We need more people to care. Mm-hmm. And so if you have the ability to even take a couple buddies along and go to your local chapter banquet and have a good time, and we're able to do that, or better yet, volunteer at a habitat project or volunteer at a youth pollinator event, like, you'll walk away feeling like $1 million, like, holy cow, I just did something that matters, and it's contagious, and you'll continue to do more, and you'll mm-hmm. enjoy it. And that all adds up. That's all part of the goals we're trying to achieve here. So I get uncomfortable with money. I do, yeah. Which is like a terrible position to be in as someone who's advocating for right. our largest fundraising campaign that yep. we've ever kind of put out there. But if you can't write a check for $1 million, this campaign's still for you.
Right.
But what are these experiences worth to you? And what do you have to give, and what are you willing to do for it? Because I guarantee, time, talent, or treasure, we've all got a little bit of something, and cumulatively, it adds up to everything.
Yeah.
And I know there's more people out there now than ever before.
Well, you saw it firsthand.
Well, even look at like the Pittman Robertson dollars. Yeah. Like they just came out with that. It's 120 and change, like million above where it was last year.
We need it though.
Well, we need it. I mean, it's an incredible, you know, portion of funding for state agencies. It's critically important. You know, it's like $1 billion this year. Well, that's a lot of hunters. That's a lot of anglers. That's a lot of shooters. Mm-hmm. Don't just go out there and do the activities, but realize that you can't take these activities for granted. Mm-hmm. That's like my main takeaway. Like nothing here is promised, but we're trying to do the best we can to guarantee that it is, right. If that makes sense.
Right. Well, and I'll speak to it from my perspective. So, you know, I've been thinking about how I can personally, and then us as an organization here, a production company, you know, I recently wrote an article, a freelance article, so I'm going to get a little bit of a extra that I wasn't planning on money. And I believe my plan is to then put it into this fund, you know, just send it right to you guys, because I want to be able to say, hey, I'm going above what I would normally be doing. I want to support this as well. And, you know, I found a way to generate a little bit extra so I can give a little bit more. As an organization, in the next couple of weeks, we've partnered with Federal. We've got some flush hats coming out and some flush, I think, a buff too, that we're going to sell to our listeners or viewers, and all the proceeds from that we're going to be giving directly to Pheasants Forever.
Really?
To the Build a Wildlife campaign.
Cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
So we'll have more information on that in the next couple of weeks. We're going to talk about it on this show and let people know. But again, it's just a way that, like, we're trying to be creative. You're going to get a hat out of the deal. You're going to give us some money like you would if you went to the store and bought it. It's going to be a few extra dollars than you might be able to pick it up for online or at a store. But all the proceeds are going to help create more habitat. So those are two examples that I can speak to.
Yeah. And I think it would be appropriate. I recently fielded a question from a member after our launch. He had a good question and saying, like, okay, these are very ambitious goals. You've outlined what you're going to do, you know, in your three main pillars. And we've talked, you know, you opened with those comments. And then he's like, could you get more specific? Like, what is it? And we've touched on some of that.
Yeah.
And the main question or the main response I gave to him was, trust me, there's going to be no shortage of you understanding what you can help us with over the next couple of years. We will be going out there with messages to support, you know, the three different landscapes, the eastern, the western, the central landscapes. Mm-hmm. We'll be going out with messages to support habitat conservation, both public and private. You know, the Build a Wildlife Area campaigns, education, outreach, advocacy. You're going to hear this message over the next couple of years. And maybe you're not going to, you know, feel compelled to give to every single one of those asks. You probably don't, you know, not many people have the resources to give to every single time they're asked. Mm-hmm. But just what I would say is, you know, keep your mind open and be willing to listen to what our needs are over the next couple of years, because trust me, we're not going to be bashful about asking for help financially, as well as, you know, for volunteer time as well.
You mentioned something I wanted to talk on. You guys have split it into three regions of the country, right? What does that look like as far as projects or outreach? I mean, can you give me examples of projects that you're anticipating working on?
Ooh, there's, I think, you know, Bob St. Pierre touched on this on his podcast a little bit. There's a lot of projects that we're not quite there in as far as being able to ask for that support quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is to make this a comprehensive campaign that's nationwide, that impacts our three pillars across the board. And, you know, speaking to Build a Wildlife Area, for example, I know for a fact there's going to be a Build a Wildlife Area in all of these different landscapes over the next couple of years that people are going to be able to help support. And there's going to be education and outreach programs across all of those three landscapes that people can help support.
Mostly on local levels, right? So you might not, will it always have the Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever logo attached to it when these events happen or these outreach opportunities happen? Or will it be in partnership with a local 4-H club or something like
that. It certainly could be. It's wide ranging. You know, when you're working with 750 chapters across the country, Andrew doesn't sign off on every single email solicitation or notice that goes out, you know, so there is a wide ranging of items that folks are going to be able to support. But our goal is, as a national organization, to ensure that this money is going back into, you know, a wide ranging amount of landscapes and our different pillars.
Yep. And you used the word comprehensive, and I think that's something that's important for people to understand, like what that even means. Yes, we're going to be doing some very large, very sexy public acquisition projects coming up in the very near future.
Sexy, I like it.
Yeah,
do tell.
It's something that'll pique your interest.
Like, I'm going to want to take a peek at it.
We got some big projects like this, but comprehensive means it envelops everything we're doing.
Yeah.
But we want to do everything bigger and better and more aggressively. So for private landowners and our farm bill biologists and our biologist team, it's more landowner contacts, it's more private land projects. It's working with precision agriculture to turn more of those red mediocre acres green, you know, both in terms of money and habitat for the land acquisitions, like what Joe's been talking about for our Build a Wildlife Area campaigns. It's identifying strategic acquisition projects on a large scale that can make a big difference. It's more youth mentor hunts. It's more adult mentor hunts. It's more pollinator projects. It's everything that we've been succeeding at. So in the beginning, when I rattled off the stats of what we've accomplished since 1982, we know what we're doing, but we need to do a lot more of it, and we can't drag our feet. Like, the time is now. Mm-hmm. People are going to hear the phrase "before it's too late" over and over and over again, and we're not kidding. Read the room, folks. Look at the landscapes around you.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have time. And that's why we're here today.
You gave me some goosebumps there. Jeez.
Well, okay.
Andrew
so
has the power to do that.
Yeah, wow. That's a marketer right there, huh? Well done. So, you've been, this initiative launched a week ago. What's the feedback right now?
Me, personally, I've had close to probably 100 conversations with donors and members since that launch. And some of the people knew about the campaign going into it. Some of them, it's the first time hearing that message. And I mean, I'm super proud of the message that we put out, you know, last Thursday. And Andrew and his team worked their tails off to put that together. And I couldn't be more proud of the message that we're putting out there right now. And to those people that are wondering for those specific ways to help,
yeah,
again, it's coming. You know, this isn't...
So there's not a call. Is there a call to action to... That's my next question. Is there a call to action for somebody listening to it that says, all right, I'll do it. I'm going to throw $50 in there, or $100, or $1,000, or whatever it might be. Or I want to talk about my land. I want to move forward with this. I'm going to do it. Got me inspired. Yeah. What do they do right now?
I don't think there's any one call to action out there right now, because we have 140,000 members, and every single member, I shouldn't say every single member, there are many reasons why people support our organization. And the only call to action that I would put out there today is to engage. Get onto our website, find ways that you can partner with our organization, whether that's financially or through your time and talent.
We can give the listeners some homework, though. Here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Go to calloftheuplands.org.
There you go.
Calloftheuplands.org, right? Mm-hmm. At the top of that page, you'll see an 8-minute long film that we spent a lot of time putting together, and I think it turned out great, but I'm very biased.
Well, and you know what? I feel honored because I get to be in it a few times.
And you're in it,
my wife is in there, too.
So what people need to do is just watch that film,
scroll
through that website, see if there's anything there that resonates with you. At the bottom of that page, there's opportunities to contact us. You can reach out. We'll engage with you one-on-one. You can get to me personally, and we can talk about this if you want. Like, we're not hard to get at. But I guarantee you'll find something that we're doing that resonates with something that you care about. Mm-hmm. And again, to hammer on the time, talent, or treasure, think about what it's worth to you, and think about how you want to be involved. And there are entry points there, and just know that this is just the beginning. It's just the beginning.
Well, it's exciting. I'm glad to be a part of it. Obviously, we're doing our best to support the mission as well as we can. We live it just like you guys. We love it. We want to see opportunities continue to grow and stop losing these opportunities, these lands that we have available today. So
yeah.
We stand behind this mission as well. And again, callofthe.org, right? callofthe.org. Learn a little bit more about it. Gentlemen, thank you for pouring into this project for the last several years behind the scenes. Now you can talk about it. It's exciting. You've done a very good job. We'll definitely keep in touch on this. And like I alluded to, we're going to be offering ways that we're going to try to help fund by giving Flush apparel, and proceeds going to Pheasants Forever. That's going to be coming, I want to say, in like a week or two. We're just waiting on getting the specs back from the shop, the people that are making it.
Yeah, I'll put my order in.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. It's I saw a sample, and it looks nice. It's a kind of the olive green hat that you and I are both wearing right now that say Pheasants Forever. It'll say the Flush, and then on the back it's gonna have Pheasants Forever. That was one of the hats I saw. So, it's just a nice casual hat to show the pride for cool. The Uplands thank that you. We all love so much, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Travis.
Once again, thank you to Onyx for helping us make this show possible. Be sure to download the Onyx Hunt app before your next hunting adventure to find out why it's one of the most valuable hunting tools available today. New episodes of the Flush television show are being uploaded each week to our YouTube channel. Simply search for the Flush TV and on YouTube and subscribe to our channel. You'll be notified every time we upload a new show. You can stream them in their entirety from home, at work, or from your favorite hunting destination. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.